If you don't sit in your lucky seat, your team could lose. So don't leave your lucky seat. But do pick up your phone or computer and order B-Dubs to go. Or if you've got a big group, call in for the party menu. That way you can order wings, pick them up, and get back to your lucky seat. And if you do lose while sitting in your lucky seat, you can still feel lucky eating your feelings. Spicy feelings. Keep your superstitions. We do it for you. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Prices and participation vary. See participating locations for details. Void where prohibited.
Welcome to the Power Your Life radio show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, certified coach, and energy master, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and wellness in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to help you shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. And we have something really important to talk about. Oftentimes, many people on the autism spectrum are misrepresented, misdiagnosed, misunderstood. And today, we may not be clearing up everything, but we have a really forward-thinking individual who puts her thoughts into actions to really create a better life for people on the spectrum. And I'm talking about Joanne Laura, who has dedicated her life's work to improving the lives of individuals with autism through movement and through music. She's also a core adjunct professor at the National University in California, and she also helped design their autism certificate. Her advocacy has led to founding the nonprofit organization Autism Movement Therapy, the recipient of 3 Autism Speak grants, which is also home-based in California. Her method, Autism Movement Therapy Method, Waking Up the Brain, that's her book too, but her method is incredible. I have her book. I've seen some of her performances, not close up and personal, but I think that her message is so vital. She has trained people all over the world in helping, certifying them in autism and certifying them in movement therapy from United States, Canada, India, Malaysia, South America, UK, Italy, China, Kuwait, and so many other places. And she talks about how music and movement have an incredible effect in the creation of speech and language in behavioral and cognitive domains for individuals on the autism spectrum. Welcome, Joanne. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, Joanne. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
You know, it's my pleasure, and I've looked at some of your stuff, and it's really so exciting. I have your book here, too. But I think that the effect that you're making to, firstly, globally, is helping people understand the importance of movement and music to people with autism. So tell us a little bit about what that means and how that really helps people on the spectrum be able to learn, to communicate, to shift their behavior.
Well, what we're finding is that, and it's been kind of an uphill battle in the last couple of years, but now we're looking at a movement and music program as a real viable intervention for individuals on the autism spectrum. With that said, what we're doing is activating that caudal cortex in the brain that stimulates the lobes that actually kind of makes a charge, if you will, for the areas that are not functioning. Autism is a neurological impairment. It's not a disease. So each individual with autism is going to manifest in a different way. So there's a saying, if you've met one individual with autism, you've met one individual with autism. So what we're doing is looking at specifically case by case, individual, where that individual is, and then serving them through a movement and music program that activates gross motor, stimulates audio processing in the temporal lobe, and gets that frontal lobe organized, which is our executive functioning lobe. And what we're seeing is many of our individuals who have limited communication or limited speech, or they like to say nonverbal, but typically an individual is not nonverbal. They, if you're making sounds, you are verbal. But we're kicking language. So we're seeing a little ones that we're working with, even at a young age of 2 years of age, who are not speaking, have delayed language, speech and language, who are beginning to talk. So that would be probably the most important outcome from the movement and music. But then you get the sheer pleasure of dancing. You get a social skills aspect to it. Behaviors begin to fall away. Behavior is a criteria for autism, behavior, speech and language, and a social skill deficit. So we're serving all the areas in a movement and music program.
And, you know, it really works, and that's the beautiful part of it. Now, when you're training people all over the world, because, yes, when you're working with one individual with autism, it's one individual with autism. How do you help them understand that concept when they're teaching dance and music and working with, are they working in groups? Are they working more individually? How does that work, and how does that concept shift to the people that you're certifying?
Well, what we're doing is repetition patterning and sequencing. The brain likes to know where it is, if you will. In other words, the brain wants to see structure. The brain wants to be able to make sense out of its environment. We're presenting a 45-minute structured pattern and sequencing class. And that means that the class remains basically and typically the same. It's the theory of ballet. If you've ever taken ballet as a youngster, mm-hmm. or as you
took ballet classes, then you know that you're always going to go in and start with your left hand at the bar and plies, and the class stays basically the same throughout. So you could, without fear, say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to Paris, or going to Mexico, or I'm going to New York. I want to take a ballet class. You know what to expect. Our individuals with autism want to know what to expect as well, and we call that taking the fear factor out. They live in a world of fear. They live in a world of unstructured variables in their day-to-day existence in life, in their academic settings, as well as their after-school and related services settings. So what we want to do is take that fear out so that they know what to expect. So when I hear people, or I speak with mothers who say, oh, yes, my child has taken a dance class, but it didn't work out. Well, how did that happen? What does that look like? Oh, well, he ran out, meaning, you know, he ran out of the room of avoidance, escape avoidance, or he was at the corner under the bar. I say, well, what kind of a class, what was happening in the class? Well, every time we go, it's different. Right there, wrong. You want to make sure that the individual knows what he's coming into, is comfortable, and he knows what to expect. If there's anything that I could say to anyone that's delivering a movement and music program, because we want our kids to have access to movement and music, it's such an incredible intervention for them. Make it the same. Make it predictable. Make sure you're using patterns and sequencing, that the individual knows what to expect when they come into that environment every time they come into your dance class or your movement and music class.
You know, I agree. I think that structure and that repetition is important. And sometimes it's not just people on the spectrum or individuals on the spectrum, but that need that. We also, to some extent, need that in our lives when we structure our morning. What are you doing in the morning? How do you wake up? And I think that that's so important. And like you said, it takes the fear, it makes people more comfortable. So that's an essential part of it. Now, you have this book, and like I said, I have it, and we talked a little bit about how it does wake up the brain. tell us why this book is so important, why you wrote it, and give me a little, give our listeners really a little bit of background about the book and how it's serving people today.
Sure. Well, I started, Joanne, as an educator. I have a moderate to severe education specialist credential. So I began working with our population back in 1999 in the LA Unified School District. And I had special day classes where our students stay in the same setting, if you will, during the day, and their academic curriculum is tailored to the individual with alternative curriculum. I kind of, and at this time it wasn't happening, it's happening much more now. I know that because I go into the school settings for National University all the time here in Los Angeles. But back in 1999 and 2000, we weren't using the arts as a program, an intervention program for kids with autism. And I had a third, fourth, and fifth grade class. And I had 9 students, and many of them were rolling on the floor and stimming on the lights, and we had 3 or 4 individuals who were nonverbal, not talking, and then we had some pretty aggressive behaviors. And I would move the chairs and the desk over to the side, move the beanbag chairs, put on music, and we would do yoga and we would dance. I would do a short dance class. And I always played music at the front of the room in my CD player if the students were working on task. So I had music continually playing with no lyrics, either classical or environmental music. I was doing yoga, I was doing dance, and these kids started not stimming, being able to sit in their chairs. I taught them to read. Had one boy that I think of specifically who left 2 years later from my class and transitioned into a middle school setting. He was working on a computer. They all were working on computers, but he had come to a level where he was mastering a math program and a language arts program. He was talking, albeit, "Will you be going to middle school with us,
right,
Miss Laura?" in a very, you know, in a cadence that we're this familiar to us for individuals with autism. But nonetheless, and to that I replied, "No, but you have my number and my email, and your mother can call me. And if you want to talk to me, you can come back, blah, blah, blah." And he said, "We are going to miss you, Miss Laura." And I thought, you know what, bingo, it's all about that movement and music. And when I transitioned, I was working on my master's at that time and writing a thesis on environmental toxins as an etiological factor in autism back in the early 2000s, meaning coal-burning power plants and PCBs and dioxins and dimerithol and vaccines in the late 80s and early 90s. And I said, when I transition into a university setting, which I had my heart set on, then I'm going to develop a program for our kids, and that's what I did. And in 2007, I made the Auto Aerobics DVD, which is a DVD that can be used specifically for educators in the public school system. It's scaffolded in 3 levels, and they're only 11 and 12 minutes long, and they're color-coded. So many educators use the Auto Aerobics DVD across the country. And then I started a class. I just started up an autism movement therapy class. And there weren't any of those classes in Los Angeles. And we've been up and running since 2008. We've had hundreds of students come through. I have kind of a core group. I have AMT dancers. Those are the dancers you're talking about. You saw performing, because there's a lot of video on my website of them actually performing. We're asked to perform maybe 5-6 times a year. They all get very excited. They love performing, and of course, it's just the parents. It just hangs the moon for them, because they don't have the opportunity to see their kids in a performance setting very often. So they get out and they perform, but they come to class every Saturday. The class is every Saturday in the Valley in Los Angeles from 11:30 to 12:15. And when I'm in town, I travel a lot, but I'm usually almost every Saturday of every month. I'm in town, and we have 8 to 10 students who are there every Saturday at 11:30, and those are kind of the core. That's the basis of the book. I wanted to write a book because I knew there were a lot of individuals who couldn't come to me. I certify and train, and I travel with a certification, but you know, it becomes expensive to travel for a certification workshop outside of your hometown. And I wanted to be able to reach individuals who knew that movement and music were a wonderful intervention for our kids and didn't know how to go about delivering one. And so I was approached by Jessica Kingsley Publishers in London. They said, would you write us a book? And I said, absolutely. I had been trying to pitch them a children's book, and they were about autism, about a boy who begins to speak through taking arts and ed movement and music class, a dance class. But they weren't interested because he was fully included, and that was a little bit pushing the envelope for them at that time. And they said, how about an autism movement therapy method book? And I said, absolutely. And we're writing another book because I've segued into adult programs, 17 and older, pre-employment skills to jobs, in a program called Autism Works Now. That's in its second year of pilot. We started with a Temple Grandin and In Friends event, Autism Works Now, honored Temple. Temple spoke about how important it was for jobs, job training, and how we have to get our kids working when they transition out of the public school setting. So now Jessica Kingsley Publishers has asked us to write another book. We deliver in January, and it's called Autism Works Now Method. So I continue to want to be able to pass the information and the knowledge on to anyone who wants it. You know, anybody who wants to serve this population needs to have the tools to do it. There's many people out there that are writing methods books. We're one of the first to write a work program. We're including templates for classrooms and secondary education systems, how to prepare our kids for the job market when they transition. And what does that look like? You have to be able to use a computer. You have to be able to be able to use Google Docs. You need an email in order to have a job. And many of our moderate to severe students, that passes them by. They're not getting what the fundamentals are for job and employment in this country at this time. So we wanted to serve that gap, if you will. And we also have a program every Thursday from 6 to 7:30. We meet as a group, and we have 10 individuals, 17 and older, and we have 3 sessions a month, and 1 session a month we go on a field trip. We just went to Best Buy last Thursday, met with the manager. We prepare questions for the manager. What about working here? What jobs are available? What does that look like? What could that look like for me? And we're thrilled about this program. That's one of the grants we got from Autism Speaks was an Autism Works Now program. And then, of course, as I said, the book is coming out in next June, I think. We deliver in January, so the book should be out by June. But, you know, look, we all have to collaborate in order to serve this population who are now transitioning. And 90% of these individuals are not employed.
You know, and what's so unfortunate, too, is that after they graduate from high school, that not only do they not have the skills, many of them, for employment, but they also can be incredibly isolated unless they have some kind of program for social activity. And I think it's that it really puts them at a disadvantage. So I think what you're doing, this program, Autism Works, is so very, very important. I want to get back to movement for a minute, and then we'll let go of that, because I think that also, the movement and music aspect of the therapy, it's fun. It allows children to have the structure, as you were talking about, and to work with waking up the brain. And yet there's an element of fun and playfulness about it that oftentimes our students don't get to do. And you and I spoke yesterday, and I was telling you about when I pioneered a program, and that's what I use. I, you know, for children with autism, I use movement and play to get them to do, to communicate, to work, to put, to do whatever it is they needed to do. So I think that, that that's so vital, and I'm glad that you are doing it and that so many people are on board with it all over the world, because this is the way we move forward and this is the way we really make change and we bring what's necessary to the autism population and also to their families. And like as you were talking about these students actually performing and how their parents, Joanne, don't always get to see them perform, I was just seeing, visualizing their parents beaming, because here they are, they're watching their son, their daughter on stage performing in front of people, and what a delight and what a tribute to them and also to you. I think that's essential. The autism.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that we were asked to perform at the 2015 International Special Olympics. That was huge for these kids and their parents. And then one of our own young high schoolers put on a big performance, Autism Live, I believe it was, at the Universal Studios last April, and he invited us to perform. And we also have a singer that wrote the music for wrote the theme song for Generation A, Portraits of Autism in the Arts, which is my documentary on the arts and individuals with autism that's playing on PBS across the country. And she performs with us, Susan Scheller. And there was a crowd of maybe, I think, 400 or 500 people. That was just, it's so incredible. I was standing in the audience. I was not on stage with the kids. I don't have to be on stage with the kids any longer because I've trained many of the students who are older, and they're able to actually lead and lead the performances without me being on stage, which is something, is an incredible, it's an incredible movement forward. And I'm able to watch them for the first time in maybe a year or so. You know, I was always on stage with them in the beginning, but now I'm able to watch. And I was just looking around at their parents' faces. And I mean, it's just like, it's priceless. You know, there's just absolutely no price you can put on that. To see their children up on a stage at Universal Studios at City Walk with 500 people watching them dance. It's crazy good. Yeah.
Yeah, I just think that's so wonderful. And again, how I could see parents grinning and crying and all that, all of the above. Let's go back to Autism Works too, because I think that's so vital, and that many of these children are underserved in that way. I actually work with a few families here, and one particular family, her son just graduated and is working with Division of Developmental Disabilities, and yet they're having such difficulty getting him trained, which could have taken place earlier and could have taken place in so many ways. What do secondary school people need to do to help these children, these young, because they're turning into young adults, to help them learn about some of these work skills so that they can come out more employable?
Well, here, that's a good, excellent question. And it's, you know, as you can imagine, very, very complex. And here lies the issue, doesn't it? 90% unemployment. So the public school system is responsible for putting together what we call an ITP plan, individualized transition plan, for the student when they're 14 or 16. It's state by state, is depending on what age they begin this ITP process. It's part of the IEP process, the individualized education plan or program. And that plan, the ITP, addresses three core domain subjects. One is, what would this individual's life look like when he transitions out of the high school setting at 18 or 22 in a social skills community, in employment, and residential? The federal government and mandate is those three areas are addressed. So the IEP team should be addressing this as early as 14 or 16 years of age while the individual is still in this public school setting. The downfall here is, or the, you know, here's where the rub is that they use an assessment tool. It's a national assessment tool. or it should be used. Many times I find it's not used. They ask the individual, what do you want to do? I want to work at a mechanic like my dad. Great. They write mechanic. That's the end of the story. Every year they write mechanic, and the individual transitions out of at 22, and that's the end of the story, because there's not a job available for him, and he has no skill set. He has no skill set to be a mechanic.
Right.
You know, it's just, I mean, it's ludicrous. It's ludicrous, Joanne. So now there is a tool. There's about four different tools that can be used that are assessment tools that kind of hone down what that individual could be good at. And we should be using it. One tool is called WorkSmart, and it's good for our moderate to severe individuals. We use it for Autism Works now. At any rate, what we need to do is, once we've taken that assessment and we know what that individual is great at, and say they're 17 and they go, you know what, this kid is really loves to bake. He needs to work in a bakery. And let's face it, there's a bakery on every corner in this country. We should not be having to say our kids are 90% unemployed. It's vast and varied of where they can work and the jobs that should be available to them. So he's good at baking. He likes to bake. He does an assessment, and it says, wow, this kid's great. You know what? He knows how, he understands recipes. He likes to make things. He likes to see a cause and effect. This would be a great job for him. Well, good luck with that, because where is he going to learn to bake? In Los Angeles, there's only 6 schools that offer what we call a career and transition center, where they're offering skill sets like that. One of them I know of, I love. I actually gave them an award at our Temple Grandin and Friends Autism Works Now. Said, look, this is the model we need to be replicating across this country. It's called Miller Career and Transition Center. They have a 650,000 full-on bakery, a $650,000 bakery that has the steel and the metal and the things and the ovens and the, where you really learn to be a baker. But we have 6 of those. 6. Wow. How many kids are being served? Maybe 100 a year are transitioning that know how to bake. And then it even gets even more complicated, because when you ask the question, how many of them who were trained to work in a bakery when they were in high school in a transition program between 18 and 22 years, how many of them are actually working in a bakery? Well, we don't know those stats, because we're not responsible for getting them the job. So it goes back to your individual who's working at the DDT. That's all well and good, but we're putting Band-Aids over bullet holes too late. We should be teaching skill sets and a vocational training across the country in middle and high school, so that we're educating these kids with a skill set that equates to a paycheck and a job.
As you know,
on Hillary Clinton's Disability Employment Task Force team. That's what we were shouting. Bring back, if you heard her in her speech in one of her speeches in North Carolina, she said, I want to bring back vocational centers. Hello? That's the way to go. We need these individuals to know
how to do something.
Wait.
Do a job.
You know, I think that that's so important. And I think also that there are ways, when these kids are in high school, even to have some kind of so-called internship program, whereby that child who is great at baking can actually go in and work in a bakery while he's in school and learn those skills a little bit. And also, there needs to be more, like you're talking about, in terms of transition, so that there is some follow-up or follow-through or whatever it is. So it's not like, okay, we're done. That kid just aged out, and now we're not responsible anymore. Well, I think that's malarkey, and I think that needs to be addressed as well. So I'm glad that you're doing that, and I think that's so very important. And, you know, it really puts these kids at such a disadvantage, because many of these kids, like the one family that I was talking about, her son is so gifted in computers and in mechanical skills. Nobody taught him. He just knows how to put things together, and yet they haven't found a program for him that matches his skill set whereby he could learn and begin to make money and feel like he's contributing and feel really good about himself. And that's a disservice to so many of these kids. You know, I have a friend who years ago, she did in New York, she was, and it wasn't necessarily with children on with autism or on the spectrum. She was a vice principal, and she connected with a lot of dancers, musicians, computer. She connected with a lot of businesses, and she brought them into the classroom. She actually had them coming in, doing workshops, working with the kids. I don't know if she had a grant or what she did, but it was incredibly exciting, and it helped kids learn in a very different kind of way by firstly learning with these professionals, these artists, and working with them firsthand. And it was just a beautiful, you know, what came out of it was something very, very beautiful. So we need more of what you're doing.
Yes, and that's part of, that is a big piece of our Autism Works Now program. As I said, we were at Best Buy, but last year we piloted the program. We were at Fox Studios in HR. The HR director actually went one-on-one with our candidates. They brought in their resume. She looked over their resume and said, tweak this and this and this, gave them a mock interview, if you will. We also were at with the CEO of FX on Fox Lot Studio, Chuck Schaffler. He met with us in the boardroom. Couldn't have been more cordial. We're going back there next week. He's invited us back this year. You know, these are the kind of things. We're trying to give the candidates the opportunity to see what's out there because they're so cloistered, they don't even know what's available for them. I love what your friend's doing. We also do have workability programs. I want to make sure I make this clear. Workability programs are national, and they are where when the student is in high school setting, they are able to go out a certain number of hours a day and work at, say, Macy's or Bloomingdale's or Joann's Fabrics, Best Buy, Home Depot, and they receive a paycheck. And it's supposed to be, you know, it was put in place in 2000. It's part of the ITP process that was put in place in 2004, I believe. It was one of the amendments. And it was to introduce individuals in the high school setting to what's out there as far as job opportunity for them. What happens is they found that it doesn't extend to after they're in the high school setting. So when they're 22 and they transition out, just like you said, you know, don't let the door hit you. And there's no follow through between that job that they had at Macy's. There's no employment. So the employer is, it's kind of a win-win for the employer because they get the opportunity to have a lot of our kids come in. They take the clothes, say Macy's, they take the clothes out of the boxes, they put them into medium and small and the sizes, and they hang them up. They do a service for the employer.
Right.
But it's not returned to the individual or the school system after that kid transitions. So there needed to be another piece that said, okay, oh, yeah, but guess what? And you also need to hire a certain number of these percentage of these individuals when they transition. And that's not what's in place.
That needs to be in place. That's so important, especially they're doing a service. They've been trained. They're good at what they're doing. And obviously you're going to hire the ones that are more skilled and that got used to the culture and exactly what the job requires, and yeah, do it.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So the new buzzword, I will say to you, the new buzzword nationally is internship. And the federal government is pushing for programs where they're giving larger incentives for big businesses and medium. And I like to say they need to make sure they're doing it for the small business as well. Because as Temple Grandin and I say, there's where you're more apt to get somebody that'll say, you know what, I'm a small business. I'd love to train you. You're like your friend's son. He's great at this. I need that guy. Say it's computer graphics. I need that guy on my team. I'm going to bring him on. And an incentive from the federal government tax-wise is going to even make that more possible. So that's what we're looking at. We're looking at the federal government playing a hand in this. Now, who knows what's going to happen now in the federal government and the hand in disability? That's kind of up in the air, isn't it? We don't know. So we knew with Hillary. We knew what Hillary's mandate was. We knew what her protocol was for not only transitioning and employment, but for in the beginning for parents who were getting early diagnoses. Early intervention, you know, we knew what that platform looked like. Sadly, the other candidate doesn't have a platform. So,
right, and, which is unfortunate, really.
Yes.
I think, too, that what you're talking about in terms of small businesses, that there could be small community businesses, that there may be something more warm and friendly and it may be more inviting to some of our kids, and it could really open up so many different doors. I could use somebody right now as an assistant who could do this, who has computer savvy, right? I mean,
right. It happens to us in Autism Works now because we're at CARD, Center for Autism and Related Disorders. Dr. Doreen is a friend of ours. And that's a global behavior, ABA program. And she offers us a boardroom space for our class every Thursday night. And we have to hook up our projector because everything's done on projection onto the white wall. And we're using Google Docs. Everything is technology. And sometimes we have a hard time connecting in and we have to reroute around, you know, around like a block or a firewall.
Right.
And there's an 8-year-old little guy there named Brody who's like, I got it. You know, he comes and he sits down and he tweaks it and we're on, you know, and we're like, thanks, Brody. You know, he's 8 years old. He's going there for behavior, you know, and he's like the best thing in technology. We're like, oh, Brody saved us. You know, he saved us tonight. But yes, our kids have what we call splintered skill sets, as we know, and many of them are very, very savvy in the computer. They grew up with computers, you know, with holding a cell phone, you know, when they were 2 or 3. So they really know what's what in that area. I also would say that Microsoft, to our audience, a listening audience, Microsoft is looking for those individuals and is employing individuals who are tech savvy. But that's all well and good, and I applaud that, but there's so many more of our individuals that aren't going to be able to fit that bill. You know, we need to be able to serve all the way across the spectrum. I'm glad that there are corporations that are looking for that next genius, if you will, that are looking for that next Temple Grandin who's going to change the way we do business in computers. But that's not the majority of our kids. That's not the majority of our population. We need to go back to the drawing board. We need to teach them a skill set. And I say that the public school system needs to be responsible for that. And we're putting Band-Aids over bullet holes late in life when they're 22 and 23, having to go to the Department of Rehabilitation and say, guess what, I can't get a job. Well, yeah. How about why aren't we waylaying that, and why aren't we teaching in a middle and a high school setting in vocational center schools across the country skill sets? Bring back those vocational training. I know what the answer to that, because I'm also a columnist for Autism Asperger's Digest, and I contribute to each edition. Temple Grandin is our lead editor, and I just wrote, it took me 6 months, and I wrote on the transition process. And I went back in because I said, hey, I'm talking about bringing back vocational training centers, and Temple's talking about it, and now we have Hillary Clinton talking about it, but I don't know what happened to them. And I went back, and I did some due diligence. What happened to them was when No Child Left Behind came in in 2000, the Bush administration was looking to raise the bar on educators and their credentials. So it was a mandate that served individuals for reading and math skills and writing, because that administration said, you know, not enough kids know math and we can't compete in the global economy.
Right.
We've got to get our kids up to speed. But what happened was those vocational training teachers didn't hit the mark, because they didn't. Many of them came from the outside edge, not in through up through education. They were woodworkers. They were metal workers. They were workers. And just as a sidebar, this country in 1917 began vocational training centers. So they were at the turn of the century. People saw, the government saw, the education system saw, we have a need to train individuals. Let's do it through the public school system. So they had been around for a long, long time, and they were kind of looking the other way on that metal worker and that woodworker, and they didn't have the credentialing that we do, you know, that is required now for teaching in a public school system. So what happened was, when their times came up after their time for renewal and they tenured out and they retired, they didn't get replaced. So the vocational centers went by the wayside. That's what happened to the vocational centers.
You know, and that's a travesty.
That's what happened.
Right, and that's a travesty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. There are many pools for, you know, I worked in one. I actually was an executive director of one here that's a residential community, vocational, educational, and they actually have, they still do, they have programs where they have kids work in different industries and they do the training and they get these kids jobs. But again, this is a private school as opposed to a public school that needs to think about what are we doing for our population so when they leave, they are capable, they are employable, and they can do so and make a living and also make a contribution. We still need bakers. We still need woodworkers. We still need carpenters. But, you know, people have homes, people have business cars. We need all of those. And it's important that one of your main focuses is on that, because we need to bring more attention to this so that we can have more students trained.
And more people working. And it's not a cradle to grave. We need to take away that cradle to grave. We are living with a cradle to grave reality of individuals with autism. We are. And very few of them, even with Asperger's, who are high functioning, get jobs and keep them. The attrition rate is terrible. They get the job, but they don't have the social skill to keep it. And unless they work in the back corner in a cubby, and they eat their lunch there, and they don't have to interact with their other coworkers, they don't keep the job. Because everyone goes, well, he's odd, and he doesn't say hello, and he never asked me about how did those Dodgers do? You know, it's
right.
You know, and then he slips up one time, and something, you know, isn't right, and they let him go. This is what's happening. This is the state of affairs, if you will. And so... Yeah, it's all of our responsibility, because guess what? It's our taxes. We're paying for that cradle to grave. It's SSI money, Social Security money. And who wants, and forget all the money, who cares about the budget, who wants to have nowhere to go every day? That's the deplorable piece, is that we're not giving individuals a place to be somebody. A seat at the table,
only,
if you will, is what we
and
call
not
it.
Not only that, if they don't have a place, if they're just being idle and they don't feel good about what they're doing because they're home and they're playing with their phone or whatever they're, you know, or watching a video or playing a video game, they may be idle and they may also not feel good about themselves. They may get into trouble. They need to be functional. They need to be contributing. They need to be working with other people. And many of these young adults have incredible skills, but it requires us to train them and to have that carryover so that they're not only getting the training, as you're talking about, but there's something beyond that. So that there's the training, there's the actual receiving of the job, but there also needs to be some on-the-job training in terms of what you're talking about, Joanne, socialization. What do you do when you have other employees? How do you interact with them? What kind of exchanges? Because all that is incredibly important. We are running out of time, so I want you to give our listeners a little bit of information about how they can reach you if they're interested in also learning more about movement therapy, being certified. Tell people how they can get a hold of you, a hold of this book, Autism Movement Therapy Method, Waking Up the Brain, and all that wonderful information that you have.
Certainly. So autismmovementtherapy.org is our autism movement therapy website, and we have a tab that says store, so you click on that, and that'll take you to the products where we have the t-shirts and the Temple Grandin t-shirts and the autism movement therapy t-shirts, but also we have the book, Autism Works Now Method, Waking Up the Brain. We have the documentary, Generation A, Portraits of Autism in the Arts. Temple Grandin's in that, Stephen Shore's in that, Elaine Hall, and eight individuals on the autism spectrum who excel in the arts area. We've played in over 180 PBS stations across the country. We're thrilled, and we think, I have my fingers are crossed, that we have a Netflix pickup on that. So we're on iTunes now, but you can find that, Generation A, Portraits of Autism in the Arts. We have Autorobics DVDs that I spoke to you about that can be used in the education setting, and in the office setting, in the home setting, excellent for the home. And that's under the store tab. We also have a tab that says certification, and I train 3 times a year here in Los Angeles. It's 2-day training, 10-hour training. The next one's March 18th and 19th, and then June 25th and 26th, Saturday and Sunday. And then I go globally, wherever I'm invited to go, which is how I've gone to Kuala Lumpur and India and China 3 times. And, you know, so I go out as well. If you're interested in having me come to you, let's talk. I also have the website. We also have the website, autismworksnow.org, and that is the pre-employment Skills to Jobs website, and you'll see a lot of video on there, a lot of information about what we're doing. We're based here in Los Angeles. Again, we meet once a week on a Thursday, 6 to 7:30 for those of you listeners that are here in California and Los Angeles area. And you're welcome to email me, joanne@autismmovementtherapy.com, or call me. I'm happy to speak with you. So, get in touch with me if you have questions about any of it, or if you're looking to replicate programs in your own city. I'm happy to help with that and ideas and brainstorm with you. We all need to work together collaboratively as a global village. It's now a global village. We're all about global. And there's, you know, let me just say, as in all of my travels, I have to say that, you know, there's no better place than America for getting served for your individual with special needs. We are doing it, and we are doing it well. And we are a model for the world. So,
wonderful. And yeah, and we're going to have you on again when your next book comes out sometime in the spring, because I think that's also going to be very important. Joanne, thanks so much for all that you do, for your insight, for your wonderful books, your teaching, for your sensitivity and understanding about people on the spectrum, and for moving everything forward so that these children and young adults can live vital, purposeful lives.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you very much, Joanne. Thank you for all your work. Your contribution is huge. So thank you.
Thanks. Have a blessed day. Next week, we're shifting gears, and we're going to have Adam Markle, who wrote the book Pivot, The Art and Science of Reinventing Yourself. That's November 23rd. If you missed any part of today and any part of Joanne Laura about autism and where we are now and her book, please, you can go to Blog Talk Radio, Joanne White, Power Your Life Radio, listen to it. And you can get the replay. Also, if you want to find out more about what I'm doing, and also More Heaven, Because Every Child is Special, that launch that actually is, some of the proceeds are going to the Autism Cares Foundation in Pennsylvania for their Adult Center of Excellence. You can check on my website, Dr. Joanne, DrJoanneWhite.com. Remember, each and every one of us have the power to change our lives, to support one another, and to make our lives and where we live special. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a blessed day.
You've been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the Upbeat Show to enrich you and grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again and visit docwhite.org for more information and find out how Dr. Joanne can benefit you. Thank you for sharing your day with us and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Why pay hundreds more in taxes and fees on your wireless bill? Introducing T-Mobile One, now with taxes and fees included. Get four lines for $40 each per month with AutoPay. Switch your family of four to T-Mobile and get a $600 prepaid card. It's kind of like a refund on the taxes and fees you paid to those other guys last year. Don't wait. Visit a T-Mobile store.
Top 3% of data users greater than 28 gigabytes per month may notice reduced speeds. Sales tax and regulatory fees included. Effective with February charges via prepaid MasterCard card. See store for details.